Welcome to Christ Today. Heavenly Father, watch over us and bring those to you who will come to you. Help us to understand what to do in the way of kingdom work here on earth, and help us to do it well, to do that work so that we may hear those words, "Well done, good and faithful servant." As it says in Matthew 25:23. And we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Our nation keeps printing currency, and debt increases also. Personal debt and national debt. And living like this is contrary to Scripture. For instance, in Proverbs 22:7, it says, "The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender." And Proverbs 22:26 tells us, "Do not be responsible for another person's debt." And there's Romans 13:8, which says, "To owe no one anything except to love one another." From these scriptures, you can see that it is not a good idea to borrow. And yet people do. People say, if we don't borrow the money, we would not be able to buy a house. Oh, I recognize that, but let's look at it from another view. If nobody borrowed money to buy a house, and instead people saved the money first before they bought the house, you can be very sure that all house prices would drop, and houses would then be much more affordable. Well, another part of this idea is, if people saved their money first, and then all of society would have a very different attitude about saving or spending the money they saved. And I would think that the people would then be restrained from their spending, and the politicians would also be restrained from their spending or borrowing or overspending. I mean, all of that. Like our political representatives in Congress, what they are doing is putting all of us, U.S. citizens, into a huge debt. What, 10 years ago, the debt was added to build weapons of war. 20 years ago, our national debt was added to build weapons of war, or to fund social programs. There was plenty of that also. And we gave money to other countries by the millions of dollars, or now it's billions of dollars a year, to foreign countries. Just a gift. Or sometimes it's an exchange for something like a military base, but there's lots of reasons to spend the money. And that's what Congress is doing. Congress is borrowing money so it can pay for the things that it wants to spend on. And You know who gets to pay that money back, don't you? It's the United States citizens. They do. Well, another thing that Congress is borrowing the money for is to pay the United States citizens relief money. And it looks like the bills that have been before Congress to allocate money to give to United States citizens, well, about one-third of that money goes to the citizens, and two-thirds of the money goes to projects. Projects like cities and states and private corporations, they get a lot. And you know who pays for that? We do. We taxpayers will be paying for all of it. And there are people who say, don't worry about what our country owes. We will just bankrupt out of the debt. But no, that's not the way it works for countries. Countries, when they borrow money, they have assets and they forfeit the assets. Just look in the last 20 years. Oh, 15 years. The countries that have gone bankrupt, they include Greece and Turkey and Pakistan and Ukraine. Russia did. Uruguay, Ghana and Cameroon and Nicaragua. That's been in about the last 15, maybe it has been 20 years. But things, that's just the way things are going, and there are consequences. But let's look back just for the last 15 months. There have been countries that have gone bankrupt. Argentina, Ecuador, Suriname, Belize. They have defaulted on their national debt. And now there are countries in trouble like Mexico and Brazil. And of course, Venezuela and Zimbabwe. They've been on the list for a long time. But there are countries that have been having troubles all along. They spend too much money and it brings hardship to the people. And after a country goes through a default, it is often that their electricity gets turned over to the bank or the assets like water systems or, well, sometimes it's the natural resources that belong to the country. They get turned over to the creditors of the international banks. You know, things that are natural resources like trees or iron deposits, copper, or even water. Then the country goes bankrupt and the bank owns those assets, and then the bankers collect larger fees, so they get paid back in the small amounts. Your electricity prices go up, your water prices go up, and the banks, the international bankers, get their money back that way. There's another thing that goes on when the bank forecloses on a country. The government buildings get turned over to the international banks, let's call them. And so then your government will have to pay rent on the things that it used to have, like courthouses or the city hall or something like that. Then the governments at all levels pay rents for those things. So those things have happened in other countries, and the question is it going to happen here? There was a promotional video by World Economic Forum, and they put out a promotional video that repeated the theme that you will own nothing and be happy. So they started that a few years ago. It has been in the works, in the progress, to put it into people's thinking that you will own nothing and be happy. Huh. I guess that means that they have in mind we will be slaves. Can you wonder? I do. Well, speaking of slaves, do bear in mind that the Bible does allow people to become slaves. In fact, it allows people to choose to become slaves. There's a reference in Exodus 21:1 and Deuteronomy 15:17. So, you can become a slave and be cared for. And in those cases, it was said that a slave would have a hole put through their earlobe, and that designates them as a slave. And isn't that an interesting connotation to what an earring means? I think it's interesting. Well, back to my pondering about the world economic system. Oh, what an issue. National debt or sovereign debt, same thing, is a big issue. And the U.S. Treasury and our privately owned Federal Reserve Bank, they are all a part of what's going on. By the way, every country has a central-owned bank. All of them except Iran. And there were a few other ones that used to be outside of the central banking system, but they got taken over militarily. About the international banking system, it is complex, and it is, well, complicated. And for instance, I think it's good to look at who owns our United States Treasury securities. See, this is an example of how complex the situation is. Oh, it's almost like asking who owns the national debt of the United States. It's not the same, but there's a correlation here. And so I looked at who these biggest owners of U.S. Treasury securities are. And that was as of 2020, the end of 2020. And they are Japan, $1.2 trillion of U.S. Treasuries. China, $1.1 trillion of U.S. Treasuries. United Kingdom, $400 billion. Ireland, $300 billion. Luxembourg, $280 billion. Brazil, $258 billion. Switzerland, $255 billion. Taiwan, $235 billion. Hong Kong, $227 billion. Cayman Islands, $222 billion. India, $216 billion. Now, what I find so interesting about that is how do these countries get so much money together to buy U.S. treasuries? It's an interesting question when many of them are having financial problems themselves. So what is that relationship to their treasury and the Federal Reserve Bank or whatever bank that they use in that country? It's a private bank, but it's a simple question with a complicated answer. And what I see, this is my opinion, is that when a call it a crash comes along, it will not be so simple to understand or to deconstruct. And so, with very complex and convoluted answers, we will not be able to follow the logic of the arguments that are put forth. And so, basically, people are not going to have an answer of how to separate these interests of the various countries. So somebody will come up with an answer, and it'll probably be a United Nations organization, and they simply will have the answer already formed because they've been working on this for decades. So when they come up with an answer that has been determined, everyone else will say, oh, we can't figure this out. Thankfully, those international bankers have a deal that they can agree with, they can accept. And so we ought to just go along with their solution because they already agreed to it. Well, that's what I see is going to come about because of the complication of the situation. It's very complex. I don't know that we can come up with a better simplified answer to how to solve that problem of intermingled interests in countries and banks and everything else. So that's what I think will happen. And a new worldwide system, new worldwide economic system, will come into being. And I expect that will be the beast system that is described in the Bible. Now, when will this be? That I don't even have an idea of. The time frame could be short and it could be long. I really don't understand that one. But a lot of people do speculate on the dates. I know there's that book by Tom Horn called The Wormwood Prophecy, where he describes the asteroid Apophis bringing destruction to the Earth in 2029. Is that the date? I wonder. And another date to entertain is 2060. And that date is when the famous scientist and mathematician Isaac Newton, he determined that that is when Christ would return, 2060. And by the way, Isaac Newton was a very Christian man who wrote more books about theology than about science. But we know him for his science books. Anyway, and that date 2060 was taken from his personal notes. It was not from one of his published books, but it's just interesting to pay attention to other ideas that thoughtful people have come up with. Well, I certainly do not advocate any date. I just think it's interesting to look at what dates there might be. It's a big question, and the time frame is certainly unknown. There's so many people who say, oh, look at the signs. Jesus cannot be far away. And, well, they might be so very true. And yet, we just don't know. Well, whatever the time frame is, I think it would be very good for us to preserve every freedom that we enjoy right now. Our Bill of Rights is there to preserve our liberties. And so, let's preserve our liberties and our Bill of Rights so that our children and our grandchildren can enjoy the freedoms and liberties that we enjoyed. One of the things that are important to maintaining our freedom and the liberty we enjoy is to stay out of debt. Personally, as a community, and as a country, stay out of debt. I know one of the things we think about as just nice people, and certainly as Christian people, is we think about, wouldn't it be nice to help other people? And the answer is, yes, it would be nice to help other people. And you know, to do that, we have to have something extra. We have to have supplies. And instead, what we're doing is we are relying on borrowed money to do the things that we want to do to help people in our own country and in also throughout the world. That's what we are doing. If we don't have any reserves, we cannot help anyone. We can't help ourselves, our family, our church, or other countries if we have nothing extra. So that's another part of the principle of saving that is good, is we get to accumulate extra. And we know that Americans in the past have been very generous people. We have given much to people around the world. It just, what's the future going to be if our pockets are empty, if we have no supplies, no savings to draw from, if we live paycheck to paycheck? There is nothing left over. So it's not so easy to be generous then, is it? No. We might want to help a ministry or a missionary, but if our pockets are empty, we cannot help others. We can't give anything away because we've already spent the money that we're going to be bringing in. We need a savings plan. All of us need a savings plan, and so does our government. We need to have that kind of a self-discipline to have savings, not just of money, but of normal use things, anything. The principle of saving is always good for a society. But nope, we don't have that. We don't even have storerooms. If you look at the businesses around us, there are no more storerooms where excess inventory is kept. That's what they used to have in the old days. Well, they would say, well, let me go back into the storeroom and see if there's anything that has just arrived. Well, there is no more storehouse for anything. Not for us, not for the people, not for the food that we wish we had. And if you think back to, I know this is, some will remember, some won't, Little House on the Prairie, there were many other stories also that go back to the Pilgrims' times or even to the crop failures of the 1930s in the U.S., or other countries have had them all along. But there have been things like crop failures that just happen. And we have to get a grasp that there is going to be times of prosperity and abundance. And there is going to be time when there are lack. There is a lack of goods or even production. So this is how we plan. We do that by saving. We have extra things put aside to guard against a crop failure or another calamity or something that would cause hunger or a famine. That's just a way that the whole world operates. Now, other people know that because in other parts of the world, there are crop failures and there is hunger. They know it all too well. People go hungry. And you know what people do when they get hungry? They cry out to God for relief. They want bread. And we can identify some of the things in the Bible, especially when Jesus multiplied the loaves and the fishes to feed 5,000. That was the only miracle that was recorded in all four Gospels. Matthew 14, Mark 6, Luke 9, and John 6. So, food is basic to life. Food is important. Food is something that we also need to have as a part of our savings plan. In the past, the United States has produced very much food, enough for ourselves and to feed a whole lot of the people in the world. That may continue or it may not. It's something that we have to keep in mind as a forgotten concept, though. And another thing that we just don't seem to apply is that we work for food. It is a part of our labor that our work and the soil produces food. And if you remember Adam, in Genesis 3:19, it says, "By the sweat of your brow you will eat your bread until you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, and thou art dust, and to dust thou shalt return." Well, I don't know what that says to you, but to me, it sure tells me we have to work for our bread. That's what I get out of it. It's a part of God's plan. So among some Christians, this is not a popular message. Instead, the message that they want to hear is a prosperity gospel message. Well, I'm sorry, but that is not what I read in the Bible. What I hear is that in life, we demonstrate whether we choose to live a life pursuing God, Jesus, or whether we choose to live a life pursuing anything other than God. That's what I see. But I hope that you read those things for yourself. It's all in the gospel, and I hope that you gain your own understanding of it. I certainly would not presume to tell people what it says in the Bible. I would ask you to look for yourself, and I would ask you to seek what it means to have your eternal destiny being in heaven or hell. I know we want to pursue Jesus and heaven. I mean, that's just a clear choice. Everybody wants to choose Jesus and heaven. It's better than going to that hot hell where there is no water and you are tortured by demons. So, we choose heaven, right? Beautiful heaven with Jesus. Well, Matthew 7:13 says, "Many will go on the wide highway to hell, and few go to the narrow path to heaven." Well, of course we choose heaven. But now, live your choice. That's what the real answer is. Live your choice. And to me, that means putting God first in your thoughts and putting God first in how you relate to the world. And you show that by your actions. And that's not easy. There are so many events in the world that are going on, they distract us from thinking about those very fundamental questions. And let's just take a little sample of what goes on. In the news, we have things that distract us. Well, rightfully so, in a way, because there are people who are sending rockets upon other people. And there is violence in our own communities. And what else? Well, there's 3 million cars that have not been built because of a chip shortage. And there's massive unemployment. And there's a shortage of ocean shipping containers. Why? Because they're not being empty. And they're not being empty is because people aren't buying the goods like they used to. So there's all sorts of things going on in the world. Yes, they're distractions. They certainly are. And my explanation for these things is how we relate to the world. And to me, the big thing on that is the great commandment in Matthew 22:39, to love your neighbor as yourself. And therefore, we do want to show concern for our neighbor by living in a responsible way and loving in a responsible way. That's loving your neighbor. And that means by not doing harm to other people. And a part of that is not sending rockets to other countries, other peoples. And it's not making bad economic decisions that would hurt your neighbors. And before this in Matthew, at 22:37, it says to love your God. And John 15 says that loving God is to obey God. And a part of that is being just. And just, let's see. God hates unjust weights and measures. And that's a part of if our votes are not counted justly. Well, God hates that because it's not just. So we want things to be just and correct. That's a part of loving your neighbor. There's plenty of parts in the Bible that also talk about not shedding innocent blood. In fact, that's one of the things that God hates, is the shedding of innocent blood. Jeremiah 22:3 talks about that, and so does Proverbs 6:17. Do not shed innocent blood, because God hates it. So, we had better stop shedding the blood of the innocent pre-born babies. And speaking of blood, there is also a Bible theme of keeping your blood pure. And that makes me think of that COVID vaccine. It's a mRNA vaccine that will stay in your lineage permanently if you take that vaccine. It affects your RNA, which is a messenger for your DNA. And they say once it's in there, it can never be removed. It's permanent, generation after generation after generation. And you listen to the people on the information YouTube things. There's plenty of scientists who debate this, and they are either concerned or they are not. And some say that it won't affect your DNA. Well, that's kind of true because it's RNA that the vaccine affects. But the scientists are debating this all over the place if you listen. So plain and simple to me is that I do not want to take a chance on having it affect my RNA permanently and go from generation to generation. So, me, I say I do not want that vaccination. And if you want opinions, you see we're getting them all over the airwaves and the media that say, go ahead, take the vaccination. But there are some researchers who say, oh no, don't do it. And if you want an expert point of view on that, you can look up Gert Vanden Bosch. He is a vaccine developer and a vaccine promoter, and he says, do not take this vaccine. Let's see, his name is spelled G-E-E-R-T V-A-N-D-E-N-B-O-S-S-C-H-E. So there are questions. There really are. It's not just something that everybody is agreeing on. Nope. There is disagreement among those academicians, academic people, and authorities. So, questions.
Yep.
And I think another one is now they're talking about cases which do not have symptoms. Oh, yes. There was one about the New York Yankees having, one report said 6, another 8, another 9. So what does it actually? Well, I don't know, but the New York Yankees have 8 or 9 people. Apparently, 8 of them have no symptoms, but they have the COVID. So how do you have a disease or an illness or a virus that has no symptoms, but you've got it? Don't you have to be sick if you have an illness or disease? I don't know, but there's something going on here. Oh, those New York Yankees, they had all gotten vaccinated, every one of them, and their support teams, people on the team, all of them had been vaccinated. And so it was just so amazing that 8 or 9 of them would have come down with the COVID virus, but 0 symptoms. It's just interesting. Who are you going to believe? Do you have the virus or not? That reminds me of that old Groucho Marx movie where he says, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? So the evidence is right in front of you, but are you going to believe what you're told? That you have a sickness, a virus, I mean? Or are you going to believe yourself that you don't have symptoms? Boy, there are so many questions, and there's so much social pressure. And what are we doing? We are shutting down our economy because of a great big disease that hasn't made a lot of her harm in our society. But the world is shut down. We have shut down the world economy. We have shut down the U.S. economy. And for what? Well, it's going to be interesting. 50% of the U.S. population has received that vaccination, or at least one of them. And in Israel, it's about half that. 25% have received the vaccination. And I think in Israel, it is a lower percentage because they remember World War II and the experiments that were done on Jews by the doctors. Well, there are real questions about this vaccine. Oh, I'm just thinking there was a couple of people who were experts and developers, like they say this vaccine is not something that should be going around taken. Like a Dr. Professor Schuchart Bakhti, a PhD, a German professor at a university, researcher. And then there was Gert van den Bosch, who was a vaccine developer. And there's Dolores Cahill, who's an immunologist. I mean, these people are really strong in their opinions, and they have expertise that leads credibility to their opinions. So what is going to happen? We want the vaccine so life will return to normal, but I don't think it ever will, in my opinion. We will see. It might be months before we get the new COVID-21 virus, but I think we have to be very careful about what's coming. And I just don't like the idea of injecting a certain goop into my family's body. I say goop because it was grown in a media, a upon cells from the aborted fetal liver cells, or a bovine animal cells, or a poultry animal cells. And all these things have been kept alive for decades in a petri dish so they could harvest another batch of that vaccine ingredient from it. I just don't know. I'll call it a goop because, well, it's just something. And then we get so many people telling us that it's a good thing to vaccinate everybody. But do remember that these statements about vaccination are made from doctors that are getting paid to vaccinate people. So maybe they have a self-interest in promoting vaccination. Maybe for sure, huh? So for me, I'm going to keep paying attention to the news for a while before I think of if vaccination is something that I would suggest. But for right now, I certainly don't. Well, we seek the truth, don't we? We seek the truth about the vaccine. But more important than that is we seek the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ, because that is where our eternal life is. It is in eternity. And we get it. Do we want it in heaven or in hell? So yes, I say look at the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's good news. Oh, that's enough about the vaccines. There are people who have died from the vaccines, they say. The numbers are very skewed. And we don't know what the true numbers are. But apparently it's in the thousands. And there's a lot of information going on, and we just want to understand what the truth is. And the truth is hidden, that's for sure. And one of the things the Bible tells us is be not deceived, because deception is so frequent in life. Haven't we all been deceived just about enough? Yes, by people who we know, by people we love. People deceive us, and it is such a heartbreak when it happens. But it does happen to all of us. So that message about be not deceived in the Bible is one we can all relate to. You know, there's another message in the Bible that I was thinking of last week. Matthew 24:24, for there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they should deceive even the elect. Well, that's really something, isn't it? False Christs? I don't know any, do you? Well, I used to think that false Christs were not really there. And then I got to think about it a little more. And so I thought about in the last 20 years or 30 years, I have heard about people that were claiming to be Jesus in the flesh. They were stories of mostly from third world countries where these people who claimed to be Jesus Christ were going around healing people, and they were collecting money so that they could continue doing whatever it was that they were doing. And that was going on in, Eastern Europe and Russia, and later in the Southern Hemisphere, all over the place. All sorts of testimonials about miracles, and they were similar to what was a miracle in the Bible. And I remember hearing news reports about a couple of those people who called themselves Jesus Christ, and it said that they had died. And I just thought, Those poor people. Not going to be good for them. I think about, this was all brought about because last week I was listening to a man on the radio who said he was Jesus Christ, and he answers the questions of people who called into his show. And he was really giving some pretty biblical responses. Quite accurate, really. And I thought about the people who called in who were addressing him as Jesus or Jesus Christ. And he answered them as if he were. And I thought, wow, what a blasphemy, where he is calling himself equal to God. That's blasphemy. So I just think that's awful, and it's going on, but it also shows the state of spiritual decay that there is going on in America. That was going on in Southern California over a big radio station. But I think what a terrible state of spiritual decay we are in America. And there's people who say, why has America not been judged yet? And the answer is in the Bible too. Genesis 15:16. We have not been judged yet because we have not reached the fullness of iniquity that is spoken about, Genesis 15:16. And if you want to think about what will judgment look like, I would think of, read Revelation 18. It's about the fall of Babylon the Great. And we can only guess how really serious it's going to get. But about that fall of Babylon, I just think that Babylon that's described is the United States of America and its fall. And there's a lot of people with a lot of opinions, but that's mine. Oh, as I see it, we are also going to have a trouble with a pre-tribulation rapture, because when I read about that Bible, I think of it in more terms of a post-tribulation rapture. And I have heard it said that people who just read the Bible and were not taught a certain rapture scenario, they believe the Bible. And the what does the Bible indicate? Well, I'll tell you. For me, I had read the Bible 4 times before I went to any Bible studies. And then I went to quite a few Bible studies and studied it yet again. So I would agree with the 1800 years of Christianity that believed that the Christians will go through the 7-year tribulation. That's about what I understood also. But after the Bible studies, I think I've gone to about 12 years of Bible studies, maybe more, certainly more. But I understand that Christians can be taught that there would be a mid-tribulation rapture and probably not a pre-tribulation rapture. But whatever it is, I think the whole thing is to be prepared for come what may. And I think of Corrie ten Boom, the famous missionary. And she said that the Christian missionaries to China in the first half of the 20th century taught that Christians would be raptured from earth before any tribulation came to them. And thus, the Chinese Christians were unprepared for the persecution that came to them with the Communist Revolution in China. So Corrie ten Boom said that the Christian missionaries did a disservice to the Chinese Christians for teaching the rapture, that is the pre-tribulation rapture doctrine. So just be aware. Be aware that you want to not be deceived. Do I know? Yeah, I don't mean I know, but I still think that the odds are what they are. Well, we have things going on in this world, don't we? And we ought to be prepared for who knows what. And I think of conflict can come. How about that war that's going on right now in Israel? And thankfully, they have that Iron Dome, which has stopped about 90% of the, 4,000 rockets that have been fired into Israel from Gaza? 4,000 rockets, and 90% of them have been stopped by the Iron Dome. Amazing. It is amazing when you think what a lot of planning it took to gather and then to launch 4,000 rockets. So we have to realize that there is real hatred going on in the world. And Israel, well, some people think it's the little Satan. And who's the big Satan? We are. America is. And so we have to be prepared for what kind of violence and disruption could be planned for us. And I don't think it's just one plan. I think there's lots of plans with lots of alternatives. All of it with the goal of degrading. Sure, degrading, attacking. What else would you call it? Harming, hurting the United States of America. That's the plan. That's the goal, because people hate the United States of America. Why? Because, well, to me, it's because they could have power if we did not exist. And that's really my take on it. And so there are so many ways that we are being attacked in an organized manner. I think one of those plans of attack is to attack our money, our currency, our U.S. dollar. Well, money is anything of value. Currency is the pieces of paper. And the U.S. dollar is something that's supposed to represent gold and silver, but it doesn't anymore. Well, right now, the U.S. dollar is under attack, and the cryptocurrencies are, well, they are increasing in importance all over the world. It's going to be a new system that comes about because of them. I do think of it in terms of a beast system. And so there are already those systems in place in the two biggest population countries of the world, India and China. And so I just think that we are being prepared for that same system. It's going to come to the United States of America. That's my opinion. But we all have to consider where this is going. Where is it going? And that depends on your worldview, because some people will say, oh, good, we get a cryptocurrency system. And they say, yes, we need that so that we can transact more easily, and it will be good for the world economy. Well, that's what some people think. And other people say, oh, no, it's a mechanism of control, and we the people will not benefit from it. So it's still a developing system, and major U.S. banks that have at first rejected cryptocurrency are now beginning to embrace it. That's going on right now. I mean, last week there was a notice. The week before that, another notice. And who is going to control it? Probably the United Nations Bank for International Settlements will be a part of it, and they have already published that they are expecting currency all over the world to disappear. So that is actively going on. It would become a world where every single transaction you and I make would be tracked and tabulated. And that means that it would either be approved or not approved. So it's a real system of control. And in China, they have already been doing this for years, where if your social score is not acceptable, you will not be able to buy or sell. You will not be able to travel. And just ask yourself. Ask yourself about your what information you have linked to you. Have you tweeted or typed on Facebook or spoke to anyone over the phone in any way that would make your speaking or your mind thinking not meet with the approval of society or of government or of something? See, we are in a time when we're going to meet so-called G-men with a computer in their glasses, and we will be watched by drones and cameras in the streets, and maybe an enforcer will come along to your home, and that enforcer may very well be a robot, and it might say, "Show me your papers." Oh, you know what? It's just one of those things. It is what is coming. But exactly what it is, we don't know. But we can see that it's pretty sure we're going to be having some shortages of everything. Shortages of water, of electricity, of food, shortages. And the world will adapt somehow. And everyone in the world should be aware that this is, well, it's on track to happen. And why? The reason is to control our population. And one of the best way to control population is to control the food. So you already knew that a population can be controlled by food. But it doesn't matter what you know. It only matters what you do something about it. So if you know that food can control you, you want to do something about it and have a storage, a warehouse of food, somehow a storehouse of food, a storehouse of the things that you need to live. So I do think about those things. I hope you do too. I have a free preparedness pamphlet, and I send that out when you send me a stamped self-addressed envelope. Send it to John Stephenson, P.O. Box 7222, Chico, California, 95927. And you can listen to any past broadcast by going to www.christtoday.org. And that is all lowercase and no spaces. May you walk with God, and may God walk with you.